Okay, well, today is week seven, I think, isn't it? Week seven.
Is it? Yeah. Really?
Went fast, very fast. Goodness me. And next week, we're all going to meet on the steps of the New South Wales Art Gallery at 2:30 p.m. At 2:30 p.m., the steps of the New South Wales Art Gallery. And I will put up onto my blog and into Leo instructions of how to get there if you don't know. Be there at 2:30, and we're going to be going through. I went there the other day to plan the route. What we're doing, we're going to look at some artwork that shows us what it was like in the age of Shakespeare. We're then going to look at some artwork that shows us something about Alice Walker's traditions of weaving. We're going to look at artwork that, like stories, is full of narrative. We're going to try and make connections between paintings and what we've been doing in the literature course. And it's a great place to go. We'll be looking probably at about 20 or 25 pieces and paintings. And you'll have a blog topic about that as well.
Did we get the free admission to the...
You don't have time. Because you've got to get back here... You've got to get back here for the learning partners at by 5:30. So we don't have time for that.
Oh, so we don't have time for the picnic.
Well, we have to talk about the picnic.
Isn't school open next
week? We don't really have time for a picnic.
No, remember you said you might eat.
I did say if we wanted to do that, we'd have to get there at 2 o'clock. I mean, if you want to get there at 2 o'clock, that's fine. And bring your lunch with you, and we can sit outside and have lunch before we go in. That's fine. We could do that. How would that suit Rosanna?
Oh, that works for me.
Would that work for you guys?
I'm not worried, because I was hoping that we'd have it afterwards and then be able to chew over.
No, we can't.
Say.
No, we'll be chewing over it as we go through it.
Yes.
And you'll be doing a lot of chewing.
Okay.
Okay. So a lot of chewing as we go through it. You want to have a picnic before it? Especially if you have a picnic before it, you'd be chewing.
Were they going to give us free admission into the Archibald?
No.
I didn't even ask for it, because there's not time.
All right.
Yeah. Now, Rosanna made me aware of the fact that the learning partners will be here next week at 5:30, and we've got to be here for them. Otherwise, we lose continuity, and they're working hard with you on your essay on remembering Babylon.
Are we allowed to go downstairs and have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea?
At the gallery. You're not going to be at the gallery, so don't worry.
I think I'll be all right. I will try.
But you've got your appointment with the doctor.
Damn.
You do.
Carly, it's all right.
No, I'm sorry.
Do you want to take photos of the stuff we're looking at so you can see?
Don't worry, I've already taken photos of everything.
Okay.
And I'm going to put them all up on the blog. So you have all the photos and you'll be able to talk about what's there and look at them. Look at it on the blog.
Yeah, and...
I'm going to go over this in a minute, Neil. Don't panic.
Yeah.
Okay, first things first. I want to, first of all, show you in Leo. Here is Mr. Leo. Leo the Lion, King of the Jungle. I want to show you what is now there and working, because as Neil told me last week, there was things in there that weren't working, so I've made phone calls, etc., and I've got it all working. So if you click in useful resources, there's academic skills focus on grammar, works. There's academic skills focus on writing, works. Academic skills focus on referencing, study guides, study smart. So all those things are working, and they're all useful tools. Now, don't get too caught up with them, but if you feel you need help with your grammar and punctuation over and above what the learning partners are doing, go there. It will help. And you've got other things in there. You've got poetic devices, which you've already seen. And the other thing to show you is that in the David Maloof module here, if you haven't seen it already, there are quite a few things there worth looking at. and there will be more. All right, that's to help you understand the novel. Okay, so that's in Leo. Now in WordPress, you will note that I have put up today all your URLs, and let's just have a quick look through these.
You've got mine associated with the wrong one, though.
Have I? Show me.
Yeah.
There's nothing in my one, mate.
You say, I'm Portamore, and you put Rima's name.
Where is that?
Just the names haven't moved when he's pressed enter or whatever. The names are supposed to come down too.
Down about fifth.
This one?
Yeah, I'm right there. But
that's right. My view is the editing view. This
okay.
is the what you see when you click on
there.
Okay. So Neil is not there. Josh has got something good. A quick look here. My impressions of I love the way he's used that image. Look at that. Josh is an expert visual artist as well as a writer. And that's what blogs are about.
But he knows how to do that.
You can know how to do it. I'll show you tonight.
Yeah.
You can pinch pictures from Google and just whack them in. Easy.
Copy and paste them.
That's right. There's a place in WordPress where you just click at the top, click in for put in either an image or something via a URL.
Does a photo count as 200 words for the essay?
No.
So it's a beautiful photo.
It is.
Lovely.
And so there is Josh's writing, and here's my comment: an honest and direct observation. Josh, thank you. This is a good starting point. Let's look at these first few pages today. Josh was having problems with the first few pages. I want to go look at those in a moment. And here's a few corrections that I made for him. What's going on should be apostrophe S. Example of this is, sentence should start with an example of this. And then I'm suggesting that he starts a new sentence. So These are things that your learning partner can go off with, but when I see them, I also make a connection. So let's move.
And you can't have an apostrophe and then use the word and as the next word. So if you put apostrophe and then say and, you can't use the apostrophe.
I don't understand, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah. Say, for instance, if I say, me and Michael
yep.
went down to the bush,
yep.
apostrophe, and...
Well, why would you put an apostrophe after bush?
To continue the sentence.
Oh, sorry, an apostrophe. Apostrophe is like a full stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so you can't use it before the word and.
Yeah. No, hang on a second, I'm getting confused. I'm getting confused. My mind said exclamation mark, but you said apostrophe.
Yeah.
An apostrophe goes in front of an S or after an S.
Oh, yeah, so what's the bottom one?
Comma.
A comma.
You can't use a comma and then use the next letter N.
Yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you can.
Comma N.
Yeah, comma. You could do that. Depends on the structure of the sentence. Depends whether the next bit is a separate clause or not. We'd have to look at examples. You're getting very detailed, Neil. You're doing too much secret study, I can tell.
No, I asked my learning partner.
Very good.
Show me, just give me the formula. So I wrote down the formulas of it.
Now here is Ray, and he's done something really good. I love his quote from Thomas Jefferson: "Enlighten the people generally, and tyranny and oppression of body and mind will vanish like evil spirits at the dawn of day." Love it. Enlighten the people. Maybe that's what David Malouf is doing: enlightening the people. That's what this novel is doing, really. Thomas Jefferson was a famous politician in America who, you know, some people see as the next person to God. He was brilliant and he was a good man, a good human being.
So that's what you thought.
That's what he wrote. And look here, Ray's, look at Ray the artist. He's got a lovely picture in there of Mr. Jock McIver sitting next to the pond there. You can imagine him sitting on the rock there, but this is Ray's poem. Sitting on the round rock, eating boring sandwich. I am Mr. Jock McIver. Ask me simple question. Do I see unseeing things, happiness of roses? Or are I going out of my mind in David Malouf's proses? Suddenly hell broke off loose. Bring me new sensations. I can see and hear all wonderful dimensions. Colours, heavenly insight, never seen before. Thank you, Mr. D. Malouf. You are my hero.
That's for you.
You said 100 words.
Yeah. And I made a comment. Where's the comment? Somewhere up here. Is the comment showing? Let's have a look. Beautiful, Ray. You capture well the impact of David Malouf's language. Am I blocking your views, by the way? No. And I love your quote from Jefferson. Yes, there are a few corrections that need to be made, perhaps. Or am I going out of my mind? Or am I going out of my mind? In David Malouf's prose. Prose is singular. I know why you put proses, because you want it to rhyme with roses. But you can't turn proses into... You can't turn prose into plural for that. Doesn't work. Suddenly hell broke off loose. Suddenly hell broke off. Or you could say suddenly hell broke loose, but not off and loose. Okay? And hero, no capital O at the end of hero. Or did you do that deliberately? Was that an accent?
Yeah, it just looks...
That was a typo. Hero! I see, interesting. And why I said probably needs correction, because Ray is Russian. He wants to bring his Russian language and experience into his poetry. You know, you don't want to sort of turn everybody into bland, perfect, correct English. I mean, if you're writing an academic essay on remembering Babylon, you have to be perfect.
I'm not.
You understand that?
Poetry.
That's it.
And it has to be 100 words.
Yeah, exactly.
Ronan. Ronan writes really well. I like this. Short review. Read more. Remembering Babylon is very detailed and descriptive read. The text goes into immense detail that really captivates the reader and makes them believe for a moment that they're almost there. I found it difficult at times to read as I'm constantly getting lost in the scattered structure of the novel and having to reread certain paragraphs to understand the plot. It almost lacks direction, or at least throws me off mine amidst the heavy emphasis on detail. The story, however, is very interesting as it details the dynamics of a white European adapting to the indigenous culture, having him embrace that culture and then have to learn how to reintegrate himself into civilized society again. Beautiful. There's only one correction I'd make, and that's I put a comment there, and then having to learn instead of then have to learn, just for the keeping the verb tenses the same. But that's well written and honest, and gives a picture of your relationship to the novel and has helped you see how the structure is scattered and how you've got to kind of adjust your own thinking to put it together. Had a lovely conversation with Neil before we started, and he said it's a bit like the films by, what's his name?
Quentin Tarantino,
who I don't know. Do you know Quentin Tarantino?
Yeah.
I don't! I'm an ignoramus! I don't watch much cinema.
It's a Pulp Fiction film.
Pulp Fiction.
No, the way Quentin Tarantino structures his movies.
I know the title, but I haven't seen it.
Jesse Brown? The same way.
No, I don't. I'm sorry. I'm ignorant. You come up here and teach me all about Pulp Fiction. Let's turn the tables. Give me a course on Pulp Fiction. No, I must admit, my kids tell me that, Dad, you're boring. All you talk is literature. Come and see the real world.
So,
yeah.
Death Proof? Have you ever seen Death Proof?
I have not seen Death Proof. So there you go. Now your opinion of me has just shrunk like this. It's gone like this.
The girl, the racing car, the car driver thing,
yeah.
She's a Kiwi.
That was Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah. I watched it especially because...
The last one was called The Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
Eight.
Adelaide Pascoe. I've seen this one, I think. The Value of Heritage.
No, this is new.
This is new.
I'm late, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm behind the ball.
Okay.
But I put it on yesterday.
Okay, so I think I put a comment in here for you. I think I did. I have put a comment. Now, it's interesting. Oh, there it is. This is a really beautiful entry, Adelaide. You write with such a clear understanding and appreciation of the characters in this story, and I do agree that in the way this story is written, Dee is presented very much as someone who's out to boost her own image. Well done. I can see that you're not going to have too much difficulty making your essay clear and readable. Great work. So it was well written. And I actually said something similar on yours, because, Ronan, you're writing very fluidly. You've mastered one important part of the whole problem. And students that come to uni, first year, second year, they finish their HSC, they still don't know how to put sentences together. So, you know, you've got a real attribute there that you can build on. Rima spoke about first impressions of remembering Babylon. If a comparison could be drawn between Remembering Babylon and anything at all, it would be that of a large open retro market thronged with people, packed with oddities, filled with items of value as well as interest and fascination. Its poetic articulation, like objects of curiosity, leads the reader on through passages of emotion, alleys of colour, events of wonder and peaks of enlightenment. Trying to convey many valuable lessons learned through hard knocks, deep contemplation and multidimensional insight through one-dimensional words, the reader may find themselves entangled and having to go back and forth several times in the same paragraph for a sure grasp of a message, and sometimes without much luck. So I made a comment here.
That's how I felt when I finished the book.
Yeah. So here's my comment on...
She's a very good writer.
She's a very good writer. You're a very good writer, Rita.
Yes.
See, Adelaide says so, and she's a good writer, so she can tell a good writer. What I've said here...
I think you're the best writer here.
Yeah.
Rima, this is a very poetic way of expressing your first encounter with the twists and turns of David Malouf's very poetic prose style. I hope that our work together on these some of these paragraphs will create the necessary luck. Okay. And that's what this is partly about here. Your thoughts prompted me to put this up here. So what else have we got here? We've got song. First impressions of Remembering Babylon.
Very nice, very nice.
At first look, I love the look of your blogs. You have an artistic eye, the way you assemble your words. It's beautifully structured. If you put some pictures in there now as well, you'll be a winning blog.
That's right.
Okay. If you want to know how to put pictures in, ask me. I'll show you after. It's very easy. Very easy. At first look of this book, I was kept in biblical point of view because of the title Remembering Babylon. But together with my language barrier, the book was quite tormenting. Firstly, in terms of its descriptiveness, by the way, it with an apostrophe always means it is, always. So... You can still have it, but you don't put the apostrophe when it means. Understand? That makes sense. It's just one minor little detail. This book has a grey look from afar, but it is full of colour when closely looked at. I love that. Nice metaphor. It gives me the feeling of inevitability, like as if I'm colourblind before it. Lovely, this is an artist looking at the world. Secondly, Jemmy the white blackfella takes the reader into his intensive, colourful journey. David Malouf visualises us, thousands of movements in different layers from very still scenes with his carefully strung words. It rather forcefully put me into a dizzy dimension. Love it. And what did I say about it? One comment. I said, "Hi Song, this is a very poetic representation of how the book has affected you on first reading. What is interesting is that you don't focus so much on the language difficulties, you talk about the language difficulties, but you focus on the rich impressions of colour and sound that the book has produced in you, even before you have clearly understood its meaning. In this way, you are completely right, the book is almost like music rather than history." And that is that you can say that about David Malouf. His book communicates like music rather than factual history. And you're kind of picking up on that even before you know the simple, the denotative meanings of the sentences. So it's good what you're doing. And that brings me to here, really. It's a nice connection with what I've got on the board. And we're going to look at the first couple of pages of the novel for Josh particularly, since he was struggling with and we all have this problem. But in David Malouf's prose, when we're looking at his prose, this is prose. Proses. When we're looking at his poetic prose, things to observe. I mean, this is an infinite list. But for instance, sentences. When David Malouf writes, some of his sentences are very long, some of them are very short. When they're really, really long, ask yourself, what's going on here? Why is he putting so much detail into this long sentence? And there's a real kind of music in his sentence structures. He's trying to fill out his sentence with a huge amount of detail that's capturing a person's richness of experience or the complexity of their state of mind. Or really short sentence where he's drawing attention, bang, to some particular idea. And then sentences have rhythms as well. Rhythms. As you read it, you can hear the rhythm. We'll look at this first couple of pages and draw attention to some of these things. The things that he observes. What's he actually looking at? Any artist, any writer, when they're describing a scene, have to make choices between thousands of things. What are they actually going to write about? What does it focus on? What's that telling us about David Maloof's interest? So that's sentences. Words. Now, words produce images. Images of sound, images of sight, images of touch, images of taste, images of... What have I missed out? What have I missed out? Five senses. Sound, sight... Sorry, which?
Touch.
Touch, sound, sight,
smell,
that's the one. And also movement. Images, all those are produced. Sounds, repetitions of words, chimings of words. Chimings means when there's a sounding, like a music of phrases bounding
one. Almost like a sonnet. Something like that.
But the actual individual sounds are chiming together. Something like that.
Okay.
Meanings. Words, of course, basic dictionary or denotative meanings. Then the implied meanings of things. And then the possible symbolism of things. For instance, honey. Honey, the richness, the texture. The fact that it brings all of nature together in a fusion. Bees are such hard workers. There's something so focused and intelligent about bees. Bees create worlds of harmony rather than destruction. And that's why Janet is so interested in bees right from the start. It kind of draws her nature to be interested in bees who have such intelligence, such connection with the divine, the worlds that the bees create, you know, the fantastic cells. I mean, Only a god could have created the mind that produced that sort of thing. Look at our cities. Look at chaotic Sydney. Mm. Who could have produced the mind that produced this chaos? I'm joking.
Governor Macquarie.
That's it. Clover
Moore.
Look at palace. Everywhere.
Now this is another word that... This is a word that I like using all the time when I'm teaching literature, whether I'm teaching poetry or prose. Texture.
Full of it.
That's it. You got it. Neil got it immediately. Full of texture. You know, you can feel the texture of this carpet. There it is. Rough compared to this smoothness here. But words have textures as well. Words have textures. And a great artist like David Maloof, who I can guarantee you spends hours working on each sentence. He really does. He spends hours. And you know what? David Maloof does not use a computer. He writes by hand and then he types it up on an old-fashioned typewriter. That's the way he works.
Still now.
I've got a little film I'm going to show you for about 15.
He doesn't like computers.
No. He's a very wise man. I wish I had his intelligence.
He's not educated on it.
That's it, exactly. You're on the money there, Neil.
What a few writers are like that, though.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on the first page here. Let's have a look.
The bottom part.
Green. Okay. So all this is how an artist in words, I've put colours in here to foray really, so to prove that I'm not completely artistically ignorant. So artist in blue and red, words in blue and green. Do you like it? It's got a certain sort of...
Long range shouldn't be saying unless there's something in between.
That's it, that's very good. How an artist in words constructs their verbal art. This is how they do it. You know, a potter takes pottery, molds it, adds water to it. A painter takes colours, shapes, rhythms. But an artist in words has to use all this kind of material.
I still don't like the talk, but I admire what he's done.
Okay, I'm going to get you over within the next fortnight, and especially when David's here, we hope to get you over the next hill so that word changes from but to yes. We'll see.
Yeah, no, it's just not
what I don't know, we'll see.
He writes for certain people, and I'm not one of them people, but...
Now, let me find something.
I admire the talent that he's shown me.
Who
the artistic talent that it would take to write something
now,
like this.
Now, who got a comment from Nigel at university? Who was it? Who was it? One of you got a comment from Nigel, who was in this class 3 years ago, and he did this book, and he put a comment. I should have...
Nigel gave me a comment.
Okay, it's you. Right. Let's go and find it. Let's go and find it here. Ronan. Okay. It's Ronan wrote short... that's it, on Remembering Babylon. And here's Nigel. Now, this is Nigel, who was in this class and is actually now with me. I'm seeing him on Friday. He's finished his 8 units of literature at university and he's applying to do honours. And he's going to do a thesis. And he's going to
do
a thesis
on... Honours is the second one, is it?
Like honours is added on to the main arts degree. So you do an arts degree, which is a basic arts degree. You can go and teach or do all sorts of other things. But if you do an honours degree... You do an extra year intensively focusing on one author and one group of ideas. Now, Nigel, he's got a very complicated life. He's had problems with his father and he's interested in trying to understand more about violence. And guess what? He's choosing Shakespeare because Shakespeare's full of violence and he's going to study violence in Shakespeare's plays for his honours thesis. That's what he wants to do. Anyway, this is Nigel. And I read to you what... I read to you what our friend Ronan had said about Remembering Babylon. He says here, the text goes into immense detail. I found it difficult at times to read, constantly getting lost, blah, blah, blah. Here's Nigel talking about his experience right here when he was where Ronan is. I remember feeling the same way about this book when I first read it. It was tough going and I felt that the story went nowhere. The real joy came when we discussed it in class with Michael Griffith and among ourselves. So many hidden gems were uncovered, and then we each added our ideas and interpretations. So much wisdom was gleaned from this rather short novel that is now one of my favourites, just as David Malouf is now one of my favourite authors. I hope you enjoy and fully participate in the discussions that follow. It is a way of not just better understanding the book, but also adding a whole new bunch of fascinating layers to it. I think it's a great response to you, and it's really, really helpful. So... Let's go have a look at
me. Is Nigel a very big man?
He's large, but he's not tall. He's about as tall as me, maybe.
Does he sing in the choir too?
No, that's David McGettigan.
Oh, okay.
David McGettigan wants to do honours as well.
Yeah, he's clever, eh?
He's very clever. Yeah, he's very clever.
And he started in his room just like
you've got. Yeah,
that's right. Okay, page one. Josh, have you got page one with you?
I can't find the book at the moment.
Oh, Josh! I've got a spare one here for you. Your luck.
Somewhere in my room.
Right? You are in luck.
How big is your room?
Not very big.
Your room must be as tidy as my room.
Yeah.
That's my house.
Thank you. Actually, I've got it already, so I'll
go grab it. No, just stay there. We haven't got time.
All right.
Okay. One day... Page one. One day in the middle of the 19th century, when settlement in Queensland had advanced little more than halfway up the coast, three children were playing at the edge of a paddock when they saw something extraordinary. All right, that's all pretty straightforward, isn't it? Three children, something extraordinary happened. No problems there.
Then the story stops.
They were two little girls in patched gingham and a boy, their cousin, in short pants and braces.
Sorry. Gingham is like this top, the material.
Gingham is material.
We were talking about it.
Oh.
That checking material is called gingham.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Very good. Thanks, Rosanna. That's great.
I never knew that either.
Are they still called gingham or not?
Yeah.
I'll just check that.
No. Oh, well, yeah, there's smaller checks.
Well, that's gingham and that's tartan.
It's a kind of
It's a fashion pattern.
An early kind of English dress.
Very good.
Not flowers, not floral, but little check things.
And I'm glad that Coralie has said that because it's telling us immediately by the taste of the word that we're back in the early 19th century sometime. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's giving a historical feel to it.
Straight away.
Sorry, Michael, what can you say halfway up the coast?
Halfway up the coast goes...
What's his point of reference? Halfway between what? Brisbane and what?
Between Brisbane and Cairns. So it's actually somewhere near Bowen is the town mentioned later on in the book.
So it's between Cairns and...
Yeah.
Just say Townsville.
Okay.
Half area of town.
And a boy, their cousin, in short pants and braces, all three barefooted farm children, not easily scared. Okay, still pretty straightforward, taking us in step by step into the event. They had little opportunity for play, but had been engaged for the past hour in a game of the boys devising. Now, young kids always like play acting and inventing things. The boys devising. The paddock, all clay-packed stones and ant trails, was a forest in Russia. They were hunters on the track of wolves.
Yeah.
Now, you remember doing that as a child, Neil, don't you?
It's unusual.
Yeah.
So how does it come if it's Russia?
Well, that's right. Well,
it's
Lachlan
from
Scotland. Is from Scotland, you see,
yes.
So he knows the cold.
He knows snow.
He knows the snow and he knows cold.
That's where I first got lost. I said, what?
That's right.
They're in Queensland, now they're in Russia.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So now you know.
Well, it's an imagination.
It's imagination.
Yeah.
It's imagination.
He always does it. Imagination.
That's right.
And also, may I say, that those few words show you straight away that they wanted a little adventure.
They did, exactly.
And especially when they talk about wolves.
Yes.
They were ready to go and face anything.
And just look at the second part of this sentence. The paddock. All clay-packed stones and ant trails. Now, there's something very kind of... The texture of those words, paddock, clay-packed stones, ant trails, it gives you a sense of the texture of the landscape. Dirty feet. And this is where word sounds are coming in here. And repetitions of sounds too. Paddock, patched, pants, packed.
There's chimings as well.
Yeah, it's the texture and the chiming. So this is how David Malouf begins to evoke the atmosphere of the place and draw us into it. It's not just factual information. He's drawing us into the event. Next paragraph. The boy had elaborated this scrap of make-believe out of a story in the fourth grade reader. He was lost in it.
Mm.
So Lachlan is lost in this imaginative story.
He loved it.
He's in Russia.
He'd become delusional.
Yes.
He'd become completely delusional. That's right, but loves this. Cold air burned his nostrils. Snow squeaked underfoot. The gun he carried, a good-sized stick, hung heavy on his arm. But the girls, especially Janet, who was older than he was and half a head taller, were bored. Bloody Lachlan in Russia again. Bloody hell, what's he doing? Snow, we're bored. They, Janet, had no experience of snow. And wolves did not interest them because they'd had no knowledge of it. But Lachlan, he's had experience of that. They complained, and dawdled.
Yes.
And he had to exert all his gift for fantasy, his will too, which was stubborn, to keep them in the game. Janet, we're in Russia.
Yes.
Keep to the game. There's a wolf coming. Oh, Lachlan, now you bore the hell out of me. Janet, come on.
Yes. But it's so brilliant the way he... lets us see what these little suburban girls, they do the same today. They get bored very easily.
They
do. but it's not what they see on TV.
That's
it's
right.
It's something they have to put themselves into.
Yeah.
And he does it in such a few little words
that's
here.
That's right, that's right.
To show how they dawdle.
So he's capturing even with these kids, he's capturing, as Coralie beautifully has put it, the intensity of the feelings between them. Okay. Next paragraph. They had a blue kelpie with them. He bounced along with his tongue lolling, excited by the boys' solemn concentration, but puzzled too that he could get no sense of what they were after. The idea of wolf had not been transmitted to him. What's Lachlan going on about? Wolf, wolf, wolf. I can't see any wolves around.
So typical.
Dogs, you know, he's got really good.
He got down the dog grid and he might have understood
it. He might have understood it. So he's really captured this dog that just doesn't get this game. He danced around the little party, sometimes in front, this is the dog, sometimes to the side, sniffing close to the earth, raising his moist eyes in hope of instruction, and every now and then, since he was young and easily distracted, bounding away after the clipped insects that sprang up as they approached. I love that. Clipped insects. What is a clipped insect? Clipped. clipping sounds. Clipping insects. Aloof is there, right there in the texture of all this thing happening. And he's
made up a new word.
Yeah, he's in there. Aloof is writing this. He's in there. This is what is so good about his writing, because if you let the paragraph sink in and the sentences sink in, you're there with this experience, with this dog chasing clipping insects. Bounding away after the clipped insects that sprang up as they approached, or a grasshopper that rose with a ponderous whirring and rolled sideways from his jaws. You can see the dog trying to capture a grasshopper, and the ponderous whirring, that's a lovely phrase, ponderous whirring, rolled sideways from his jaws. Now, what happens in the next sentence?
Then suddenly
he did get the scent. He got the scent.
It wasn't of a wolf. And it wasn't on the snow.
That's it. See, you've got it, Neil. With a yelp of pure delight, he shot off in the direction of their boundary fence. And the children, all three, turned away to see what he'd found.
Yes.
Lachlan Beatty felt the snow melt at his feet. What the hell's going on? He's been looking for adventure all the time, and suddenly, adventure is here. What adventure is here? What's happening? Who's the dog going after? What's over there on the other side of the fence? Yeah. Felt the snow melt at his feet. He heard a faint, far-off rushing, like wind rolling down a tunnel, and it took him a moment to understand that it was coming from inside him. So fear rising up inside of him, fear and terror, because these kids in this township in the middle of Queens, they've all been told, don't go near the fence. Don't go look across the fence. And there they are, they've been looking at adventure, and here it's hitting him here.
It's a great feeling of sensation.
Look at the next paragraph. And we're going to see in the art gallery next week, we're going to see a couple of paintings that look just like this next paragraph. In the intense heat that made everything you looked at warp and glare, a fragment of tea tree swamp. Now, you know what a tea tree swamp looks like?
Yes, I do indeed.
You do?
Yes.
So a fragment of tea, it looks like a fragment of tea tree swamp, like you branch out here suddenly dislocating itself from
and
the forest.
The water is red.
Yep. A fragment of tea tree swamp.
It's in the bush all the time.
Some bit of the land over there that was forbidden to them had detached itself from the band of grey that made up the far side of the swamp, and in a shape more like a watery heat-struck mirage than a thing of substance, elongated and airily distinct, was bowling, leaping, flying towards them. Now, I want to ask you about this paragraph. This whole paragraph is one sentence.
Absolutely.
We come here to long sentences, variety in length. Why is this whole paragraph suddenly one sentence? What is this incredible event that Lachlan is so terrified about?
Trying to intensify
a leading up
moment.
To
it's momentum. It's momentum. Beautiful. It's capturing the momentum of the event.
It's leading up.
It's the sounds of that paragraph actually capture this event and its complete mysteriousness. I mean, what's happening? It's like a bit of the bush or a bit of the forest is hurtling itself towards them. Listen again.
He's working for a climax.
He is. In the intense heat that made everything you looked at warp and glare, a fragment of tea tree swamp, some bit of the land over there that was forbidden to them, had detached itself from the band of grey that made up the far side of the swamp, and in a shape more like a watery, heat-struck mirage, like it didn't even look like something solid, it looked like a mirage quivering, than a thing of substance, it elongated and airily indistinct was bowling, leaping, flying toward them. How are we doing, Josh?
A duck.
How are we doing? Are we getting into the meat of this? Are you beginning to see what's happening? You understand? Great. Next sentence, next paragraph. A black! That was the boy's first thought. We're being raided by blacks! After so many false alarms, it had come. So Lachlan is terrified that suddenly he's been told of this danger. Suddenly it's happened. The two little girls stood spellbound. They had given a gasp, one sharp intake of breath, then forgotten to breathe out.
Except Jan.
What is it?
The boy too was struck, but had begun to recover, because he's a boy. Though he was very pale about the mouth, he did what his manhood required him to do. Holding fast to the stick, he stepped resolutely in front. He doesn't know what this thing is, but he stepped in front.
Shoot.
But it wasn't a raid. There was just one of them. And the thing, as far as he could make it out through the sweat in his eyes and its flame-like flickering, because what does it look like, this thing, was not even maybe human. The stick-like legs, all knobbed at the joints, suggested a wounded water bird, a brolga, or a human that, in the manner of the tales they told one another, all spells and curses, had been changed into a bird, but only halfway, and now neither one thing nor the other was hopping and flapping towards them out of a world over there, beyond the no man's land of the swamp that was the abode of everything savage and fearsome, and since it lay so far beyond experience, not just their own but their parents too, of nightmare rumours, superstitions and all that belonged to absolute darkness.
Well done.
Absolutely. Absolutely wonderful.
Oh, sentence.
Like I said before, class, it's almost like you could. It's theatre.
It is theatre. It absolutely is theatre. It's language as theatre. You got it. It's language as theatre.
Yes, absolutely.
Now look what's next. A bit of blue rag was at its middle. From which. Now, before we go on there, look at some of the ingredients of the previous paragraph, the images. Flame-like flickerings, flame-like flickering sounds, repetitions, stick-like legs. That's a simile,
implied
meaning. Stick-like, knobbed at the joints, wounded water bird, brolga or human, and then this reference to the fact that it seems to be related to the world of fairy tales, out of a world over there, beyond the no man's land of the swamp. Next paragraph. A bit of blue rag was at its middle, from which sleeves hung down. They swung and signalled. But the sticks of arms above its head were also signalling, or beating off flies or licks of invisible flame. You can imagine the kids. This is sort of in the kids' imagination what they're seeing.
Yes.
Ah, that was it. It was a scarecrow that had somehow caught the spark of life, got down from its pole, and now in a raggedy, rough-headed way was stumbling above over the blazing earth, its leathery face scorched black, but with hair, they saw, as it bore down upon them, as sun-bleached and pale straw-coloured as their own. So what's the difference between this scarecrow?
This scarecrow.
Well, that's not what the teeth
This scarecrow had skin coloured like this.
This scarecrow had skin coloured like theirs and hair coloured like theirs. But it's interesting that they had this thought that it was like a scarecrow that had come to life because it was so thin and disfigured in its movement.
Yes.
Whatever it was, the boy's intention, it was the boy's intention to confront it. What does that mean, Josh?
It means it was their intention to...
Lachlan's intention, the boy's intention, not Janet, not the girls.
It was his intention to see what it is and trying to...
To confront it.
Yeah, to try and stand up for it and trying to go up to it.
That's it.
And also you see the beginning of a sense of manliness, manhood in that boy with the stick.
That's
it's
right.
It's like a rifle. Here is a challenge.
That's
maybe
it.
The first one he's ever had in his life.
That's right.
But he has the audacity, the energy and the power and the energy and the youth.
That's
in
right.
Front of all these funny little girls.
That's right.
To confront.
Very.
And maybe defeat.
Very good. Very sturdy and purposeful. 2 paces in front of his cousins, though it might have been 100 yards in the tremendous isolation he felt, and with a belief in the power of the weapon he held, a stick that he knew was impossible and might not endure, he pushed the stick into his shoulder and took his stance. The creature, almost upon them now, and with Flash at its heels. Who's Flash?
The dog.
The dog at its heels, because the dog is... Woo! Woo! The dog has gone berserk. This is a real wolf. This is a wolf worth getting. Flash at its heels came to a halt. The creature came to a halt, gave a kind of squawk, and leaping up onto the top rail of the fence...
Said, I am a British object!
You stole my line, Carrie. You stole my line. I was just getting to that part.
I'm sorry.
How can you do that?
I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
But there is the crux of it.
Indeed.
It was a British object, not a subject. I made a mistake when I first read it and hardly looked at it again and thought, I'm a British subject. No, he's been an object all his life.
That's right. And leaping up onto the top rail of the fence, hung there, its arms out, flung as if preparing for flight. She's not going to overstage me, you see. Then the ragged mouth gapped. Do not shoot, it shouted. I am a British object. Now, as Coralie has already indicated, but we need to understand, why has David Malouf beautifully presented the wrong word in the mouth of Jemmy Fairley in such a way that ironically, what's irony mean?
Because
Jimmy Fairley had lost his tongue and spoke in an ugly tongue and he hung on the borderline of the fence.
It's almost like a Freudian slip.
And then he realised who he was again.
Yeah, that's
it's a Freudian slip.
It's a Freudian slip.
It is.
Yeah.
And because he doesn't realise that because he's lost his language.
Yeah.
What's a Freudian slip?
A Freudian slip.
Well, he needs to say subject, I think.
A Freudian slip is when you make a mistake in saying something, but the mistake actually points out a truth of something you need to know or something that somebody needs to know.
It's almost from your subconscious.
That's right. So, Josh, first page and a half clearer now?
Yeah.
So what you got to do, you got to get the book into your bathroom, stand up on the toilet seat and intone this and talk it through all the way through. You get it, you get it. We're going to have coffee now.
Yes.
5 to 4. Let's go and have coffee.
Already?
Really, really.
Good. It is 5 to 4 already.
See how theater really takes time away?
It takes time away, that's right.
No, you'd be surprised when I put that up anyway.
I will.
That's when I want to do it with my partner, like, yeah.